to know our panelists, and we'd like to open the floor to you. Alors, il y a deux microphones ici sur le plancher. Si vous avez des questions, juste à vous lever, ça serait bien aussi de vous identifier et diriger votre question à quelqu'un sur le panel.
Research on these topics. Have you come across information about best practices that will ameliorate some of these situations that you have covered? Because I'd like to see that on the next conference you hold.
Is that a question for anyone in particular?
No.
Anybody?
In general? Yeah. Well, I mean, I highlighted the benefit of school partnerships between schools and community organizations, working with youth, working with black youth, working with black families. I think that is one way of maybe helping to fill some of the gaps, you know, within schools and maybe the presence also of black professionals in schools. I think, you know, I mentioned that they provide access to they can help kids have access to support in the form of tutoring, homework help, and so on. But they also, I think, can help transfer in expertise, you know, to school staff, you know, about how to serve, you know, how to respond to black students. And I think the hiring of more black professionals, too, is an absolute necessity. And I think I was very, very interested. We had one school that was really exemplary, English high school, and because it wasn't doing one thing or two things. It was taking a whole school approach to addressing, removing barriers for all kids, whether these were socioeconomic barriers, you know, being black and facing, you know, racism. So doing things like engaging teachers in questioning the practice and training them on, you know, being more responsive, you know, to black students and other minority kids, enhancing the school climate so that all kids know that they're expected to succeed, you know, and that they will receive the support to do so. What else was being done at that school? Extracurricular activities that would reflect the diversity of students' backgrounds. Presence of the principal was very, very important as well. And, you know, and I think he or she can also set the tone for practice in schools. But in that school, too, there was also a higher proportion than average of black teachers. And what I found interesting is that the talk and the practice and the ideas of those black teachers helped to inform their peers. You know, so the black teachers would often talk about, well, we got to push the black kids more because, you know, they face, you know, greater barriers. And we were taught that we have to work harder, you know, in order to succeed. So they would pass that on to the kids. And the principal was saying that slowly, you know, this kind of perspective was influencing other teachers. So I think multiple strategies in schools and communities involving parents is a general weakness in the field. But definitely examples of best practices available. And that's one.
Is there anyone else who'd like to?
Alors, prochaine question.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Rana Al-Rabi. I work in public relations. Is everyone comfortable with English? Yes? No? Okay. I have three things that are on my mind, and if I may, I just want to ask your perspectives on those things. I will just say them one after the other, and you can comment after, if that's okay with you. The first one is, I like to use words that are both respectful and accurate. There are two words that I have trouble with, saying black people. I don't know if there's a better way of referring to that. Is it African, Canadian, but what if they don't come from Africa? That's one thing. And the second thing is the issue of race. I mean, we're all human. We have different cultures and customs. I don't know where this race thing came about and why we promote it. The second question that I have is, I don't see young men here I wonder why. Je suis très fière de voir Jonah. Mais je vois presque jamais de jeune homme dans ses discours. Maybe you have thoughts on that. And my third question is, I noticed that in the U.S. they talk a lot about the civil rights movement. And it seems like there they got by doing. They seem to confront things head on. And I don't see the same attitude here in Canada. What are your perspectives on that?
Okay, so Melissa will be the first person to answer.
Well, as far as the word black, me personally, I prefer the word black. I'm sorry, but I hate being called African American. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm Haitian. Nothing else, nothing more, nothing less. So as far as being called African and Canadian, I haven't had my immigrant status as Canadian yet. So I like the word black. I think it's just, it's appropriate. Maybe not the word, the N-word that we're not going to mention today. But the black word, I like it just fine. I don't know about other people, but I like it just fine. I think it is appropriate. There was something else that you mentioned. Oh, the civil rights movement. Yeah, that was it. I think I lived in Florida for 7 years. And yes, you're right. They do confront these things more head on because they had this big event that was called the civil rights movement. We in Canada, as far as I know, again, I'm not Canadian, so I don't know the whole history, but we, as far as I know here, we haven't had that. And as all the researchers have been telling us here, it's a bit taboo to talk about racism because we Canadians, we're not racist. We're very perfect, and we're not like the Americans. So that's why it's like that, you know? It's like we're not, that's what we like to, that's the image we like to, you know, to give to the world. So, of course, when we have racism, it's like, of course we're not racist. We're Canadians. We're, of course, that's the Americans, you know? So that's why we don't have that, and I guess it's a bit harder to confront these, and which is why we're here today.
I would also just like to add to what Melissa just was saying about civil rights. I think it's important to understand how the black community in Canada has developed in the first place, quite different than the African-American experience. A lot of the black community here developed through immigration. So people coming from other experiences, particularly in the Caribbean, where fighting for rights was approached differently than the civil rights movement. We actually had quite a bit of activism in the cities in Canada where the black community has been concentrated, namely Montreal, Toronto, Halifax, Southern Ontario as well, but the approach was slightly different, but certainly inspired by the civil rights movement, and definitely there's been marked opportunities in Canadian history where African-American leaders have come here to communicate with the community here. So I think the challenge is not losing it, but straying away from the comparison between African-Americans and black Canadians and really understanding that the beginnings and the history here is slightly different than the history there. So the approach definitely will be different. Is there another question?
Yes.
Bonsoir, je suis Dr. Lezouka, Université de Montréal. Je veux féliciter Dr. Jim et toute l'équipe d'avoir procédé à ce grand travail dont le résultat est sur la table aujourd'hui. Merci à tous ceux qui ont contribué dans le projet. J'ai juste une petite question qui pourrait être posée à Dr. Jim et à toute l'équipe. Une petite réflexion. Dans l'étude que vous avez menée, tant au niveau religieux, au niveau de la justice, au niveau de la formation, éducation pour la communauté noire, je veux savoir quel était le sentiment que vous avez eu sur ceux qui ont répondu aux questions concernant la question de l'identité noire. C'est quoi l'identité noire?
I'll just translate the question. So what, as researchers, what was your feeling or response around the question of black identity throughout this research? What is black identity?
Bon, c'est
clair, c'est une bonne question. Et nous, quand on a fait des focus group, comme on dit en anglais, c'est clair qu'on pouvait observer comment les jeunes étaient engagés dans ce qu'on faisait. Ils étaient déjà contents que pour une fois, des gens faisaient une recherche à propos des jeunes noirs, ce qu'on peut voir un léger engagement dans notre communauté, on peut dire comme ça. Lorsqu'on posait des questions, on n'a pas posé la question en tant que telle de ce qui a l'identité en tant que noir. Par contre, on a observé comment les jeunes étaient exprimaient leurs sentiments lorsqu'on parlait de stéréotypes, lorsqu'on parlait de situations particulières dans laquelle le jeune noir, il se voit pas nécessairement bien représenté. Alors on peut déduire par là que les jeunes de nos jours, ils sont quand même conscients de le bagage historique qu'ils ont. C'est clair qu'il n'est pas nécessairement celui qu'on voudrait refléter, mais par contre les jeunes ils savent qu'ils sont des jeunes noirs, puis ils veulent montrer une bonne image, et c'est pour ça qu'ils engagent dorénavant à bien réussir, à bien tenir le bout.
Moi, personnellement, j'ai pas pu remarquer une certaine identité noire. Je crois que, juste pour refléter la question qui était avant, c'est comme, moi, je trouve que dans le noir, dans le black, il y a beaucoup de différentes cultures. Peut-être, oui, il y a une identité haïtienne parce qu'il y a une certaine culture qui vient avec ça, mais je ne crois pas qu'il y a une culture noire, tu sais. Parce que là, je crois qu'on tombe dans les stéréotypes, on tombe de « Oh, the black is a gangbanger, he's a thug, he got his pants down low, all that kind of stuff ». Là, c'est là qu'on devient, dans des stéréotypes. Moi, je trouve pas qu'il y a vraiment une identité noire. Je crois qu'on a tous notre culture différente, on a toute notre culture à nous, et on est tous différents. Et là, j'aimerais pas que les gens se confondent pour penser que, oh oui, l'île noire, ben c'est ceux qui est haïtien ou c'est ceux qui est africain ou quelque chose de même. Alors moi, j'ai pas vraiment pu remarquer qu'il y a vraiment une identité comme spécifique au noir, genre, tu sais. C'est comme ça que j'ai pu remarquer.
Merci. Alors, un petit complément d'information. Je crois que il y a une identité noire et qui s'est subdivisée dans plusieurs sous-cultures et qu'elle est partie d'une culture entre guillemets africaine et qui s'est répandue à travers la terre, dont les Amériques et les Canada. Ça sera dangereux de dire à un Haïtien, tu es juste Haïtien, tu n'es pas noir. Il y a une identité noire à développer et à comprendre dans le processus d'une recherche comme celle-ci. C'est juste un commentaire.
Merci.
Hi, my name is Jovita. I'm from Citizenship and Immigration. The thing that struck me during the presentation by the educators actually was that a lot of this, in my mind, seemed to be obviously for the purpose of today's discussion, we're focusing on the black demographics, but the thought that passed through my mind was that it seemed to be more a reflection of the caliber of the educators than a black problem per se, right? Like it seemed to be a reflection of the quality or the attitudes of educators that they. It doesn't necessarily have to be a black student that is experiencing this. If they have some sort of prejudice or whatever it is in their mind, this would transcend their interactions with black students only. You know, it would potentially affect their attitudes towards other students, and so there's it seems like there's a deeper problem in terms of intake, and that's all I'll say as a federal employee. I don't make comments on educational matters, but like it seems like there's that kind of systemic issue of what is the caliber of the people who are coming in that they have, you know, that they do frame things possibly in this way. And I say that just to preface my question, which is, as educators, and I'd also be interested in hearing from Mr. Naimi on this. What is the value of race as a policy construct in these sorts of things? I mean, on the one hand, obviously we have certain communities that are, experiencing kind of differential impacts from different policies, and so you want to address those in particular. But then we do end up having this discussion about race in particular when presumably we want a system that treats everybody equally and in some ways would be colorblind. So I just thought I would get your general reflections on that, just on that question.
I think you would you like to hear from Fonyemi?
Do you want me to respond to that question? I said, you're expecting me to respond to that question? Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I think the point you make is a very good one, that we're talking about a deeper problem. You know, if I just think of the situation of one school where I think felt, you know, under-resourced, teachers, teachers felt, you know, a lot of pressures were put on their shoulders. Students were coming in with, you know, it was a school in a low-income area where kids were coming from families that were in difficult circumstances. So sometimes they were not prepared, not trained to know how to, you know, run successful, effective classrooms with kids with such diverse needs. So there is definitely, a broader problem that isn't just related to black youth. And I think I tried to say that, you know, black youth, I think the issue of race is there, and I don't think we can neglect it. You know, as people have said, it's hard sometimes to pinpoint, but maybe we need to be, you know, investigating the issue and thinking about how it plays out, you know, in our systems, in our organizations, and not be afraid, you know, to mention it. You know, certainly it's not the only issue. There are always multiple factors that come into play. But I think there is definitely, in fact, it's needed. I think it's not talked perhaps about enough. Yeah.
I asked the question not to question the legitimacy of race as a policy construct, but I guess to seek your advice on how that balance is struck, you know?
Okay, balance. I didn't get, I guess perhaps I didn't understand your question. Balance.
Balance between dealing with race as a specific issue that needs to be, like, that needs to be considered, but then also ensuring that the systemic, I guess that, for example, that we're not directing policies to address the disadvantage of one group at the expense of others, that there is a broader systemic approach that would ensure equality of opportunity for people of all origins, I guess, is the question.
Well, I think there's probably quite an extensive literature, you know, on how do you promote equity. You know, I think in education it's quite developed, perhaps more in the U.S. Perhaps my colleagues here who are more engaged in the policy field can answer that question better. Yeah.
Perhaps to put certain things in perspective, I think this discussion we should have talked also in the beginning of the day, because I think it's very important for the data discussion like this. It all depends on the school of thought. It all depends on your perspective. If you prefer the colorblind approach, then race should be banned as a construct. A colorblind approach is basically, you know, there's no such thing as race but a human race. And you can even venture to say there's no racism. There's only discrimination based on language, accent, birthplace, ethnic origin. But we shouldn't even use the word racism. The Quebec government tried to do that in 2006, banned the word race. There's no racial discrimination, ethnic discrimination. But there's racial profiling, because we call ethnic profiling. It doesn't really translate the experience of people encounter in the street. So it all depends on school of thought. When we engage in anti-racism, we cannot neglect the social, economic, political, and even construction of race as an artificial factor with which people in position of power use in order to discriminate and marginalize. So we have to keep race as an artificial socio-political, economic, as well as legal construct. Even from a biological perspective, we agree there's only one human race. Because when we de-racialize through a colorblind approach, we risk erasing the different characteristics that not because they distinguish people, but because those characteristics are used to discriminate against those people. So we have to maintain a balance. I think in the recent months we have this sort of debate based on what in France is taking place, when the word race should be banned, there shouldn't be used even distinction based on different ethnicities, you know, everything, you know, the so-called Republican value, homogeneous approach, and that basically does not reflect the North American reality, and especially in the North American reality where slavery, you know, was so characteristic of the evolution of this country, not only anti-African slavery, but also anti-Aboriginal slavery. Mm-hmm. To a certain point, even French Canadians were called also a race, the Irish race. Mm-hmm. You know, and Aboriginal people in Quebec, to certain, up to the 60s, were called the sauvages, the savages. So, you know, when we take things into an historical context, we understand more how race is used as a way to differentiate, distinguish. But we cannot ignore it completely. We have to take into account because it's there, it's practice, it's used against some people, and by taking into consideration that reality, we can better address. So I come from a school of thought of anti-racism, deconstructing certain stereotypes. And that deconstruction does not prevent us from recognizing that each group, even within the so-called black community, experiences disadvantages very differently, you know. And I think this is one of the main recommendations of the UN independent expert on minority rights, whose report just came out this week. It's on the website of UN. She suggested we should unpack the data, even on visible minorities, because in many ways, when we lump Japanese Canadians with black Canadians, with Arab Canadians, with Latino Canadians, we don't see exactly and precisely how each group experienced disadvantage or discrimination at each level. So we have to be very specific from a policy planning and public policy perspective so we can better gauge inequality in order to address them. From a political or ideological perspective, I think we have to be very careful when we hear the discourse that seeks to trivialize race or to say that we should look at a colorblind approach, because by doing so, we risk erasing the very painful experience of people who have been marked and treated differentially because of, quote, perceived race. And by doing so, we may strip away the historical, social, and political context in which discrimination has been lived.
Thank you.
Je veux Luc Pierre, programme de sol École montréalaise, ministère de l'Éducation. La question que je vais juste, la question m'interpelle. Votre commentaire et votre question m'interpellent, puis pour deux raisons. La première, je crois que déjà, au niveau du ministère, il y a des programmes, il y a des politiques. Je crois qu'il y a une volonté de travailler en termes d'assurer l'équité pour l'ensemble des élèves. Mais on peut bien vouloir y mettre des choses en place et avoir cette volonté-là. Mais lorsque certains groupes d'élèves spécifiques ne réussissent pas dans le système, il faut se poser une question et des questions par rapport à aux. C'est pas les élèves, ce n'est pas la communauté, c'est pas la famille, c'est quelque chose qui se passe dans le système. Alors, nous, on travaille spécifiquement pour les élèves de milieux défavorisés. On le sait, les élèves de milieux défavorisés, pour une raison ou pour une autre, même si on met tout en place, ils ne réussissent pas. Donc, qu'est-ce qu'on fait? Comment le système contribue à? La même chose, certaines communautés noires d'élèves ne réussissent pas dans notre système, mais on a se posé la question. Donc, la question, c'est pas si on regarde la race ou non, c'est parce que c'est là et c'est présent. Certaines ne réussissent pas, donc il faut aller voir ce qu'il y a de spécifique par rapport à cette communauté-là qui fait en sorte que l'école ne répond pas et n'arrive pas à assurer la réussite chez ces élèves-là. Donc, pour moi, ça va au-delà de juste les pratiques générales, parce que même les pratiques générales n'arrivent pas à soutenir la réussite de ces élèves-là. Et l'autre élément aussi que je trouve important, c'est de penser qu'il y a certaines communautés qui sont plus fragiles aux pratiques scolaires que d'autres. Et moi, je crois que pour certaines communautés noires, et je dirais en général, à l'intérieur, ils sont plus sensibles à ce qui se passe à l'école en termes de réussite
qu'un élève qui peut passer au travers du système, puis même si c'est pas parfait, puis on a mis les choses en place, c'est correct. Mais je pense que les élèves, certains élèves, particulièrement certains élèves issus de la communauté noire, tu as passé très rapidement sur les données de Marie McAndrew avec le ministère, avec la DSCC, la Direction au service aux communautés culturelles, qui ont vraiment fait ressortir que certains groupes d'élèves noirs vraiment ne réussissent pas. Et ça, pour moi, c'est pas possible de passer à côté de ça, puis il faut avoir de l'intervention ciblée pour ces élèves-là. Puis si c'est la race, ben c'est la race.
Merci. We have time for one last question. I'll leave it to you.
Well, first, I guess in some way to echo and thank Fo and the last intervention for their interventions, because I think it's so easy to fall prey in the current moment to post-racial colorblind kinds of thinking, and it's so terrifically inappropriate to fall prey to that slippery slope, given, as Fo enunciated, the very clear racialized reality of people's lived experience moment to moment, day to day. And from a public policy perspective, I think notions like I think John Powell at the Kerwin Institute at Ohio State with his targeted universalism, I think offers a lot of opportunity for us to think in these terms about how we need target interventions to redress historical, structural, systemic, racialized lived reality at the same time as bringing forward a common agenda. My question has, and the need therein to have disaggregated data, which I couldn't agree with more. In the reports, in the youth report, and I guess it might have been in the longer summary and not in the highlights given from the panel, but it highlighted very strongly the value of the teacher. That teacher is so very valuable as a role model and an active agent in the life of students. And two of the other reports highlighted the fact that employment equity, if it does exist, has been very poorly implemented, very ineffectively monitored. How could the panel say a little bit more about, could employment equity be doing much better in the school environment so that the teachers at the front of the classroom better reflect the diversities of the kids in the seats? And in other environments across the public sector, could more be said about how we might be able to make employment equity in the province of Quebec more effective, moving from the paper, the words on the page, to more lived and actualized implementation of the policy framework?
Regard to employment equity in education, because it's not an issue I've studied. I guess what I've heard from people I've spoken with, one issue is getting black young people interested in the education field. So I think there have been some measures, I think, to encourage young people to enroll and get degrees in education, because they're also underrepresented. But I have some colleagues from the education sector. I don't know, could you say a word about employment equity do you mind? Yeah.
Je pense que tu as tout à fait raison. La première, c'est de les avoir dans les programmes d'éducation. Puis j'interviens quelquefois au niveau des élèves qui sont en formation dans les universités francophones. Il demeure que, en général, au primaire, puis on parle ensuite du secondaire, en général, au primaire, c'est des jeunes filles qui ne sont pas issus de l'immigration et qu'en général n'habitent pas Montréal et n'ont pas grandi à Montréal, donc ils ont été peu en contact avec tout ce qui est de la multiethnicité puis la pluriethnicité. Donc ça, c'est vraiment, il y a quelque chose, en tout cas, il y a un travail à faire à ce niveau-là, c'est de leur permettre d'avoir accès d'abord au départ à la profession. Et c'est difficile de les amener. Si, pendant tout ton parcours,
tu n'as vu que quelques représentants de ta communauté dans le système, tu ne crois pas que tu as nécessairement ta place et que c'est une possibilité pour toi de pouvoir travailler à ce niveau-là. Donc, pour moi, il y a un travail à ce niveau-là. Le deuxième, je pense qu'au niveau des entrevues, puis particulièrement à Montréal, je crois qu'il y a une volonté des commissions scolaires de pouvoir engager de plus en plus des éducateurs qui sont issus de l'immigration et particulièrement de la communauté noire. Je pense que la volonté est là, mais le problème, c'est qu'il n'y en a pas énormément beaucoup. C'est ça le problème. Donc, ça, c'est la réalité. C'est que dans nos facultés, ils ne viennent pas. Et moi, je pense qu'il faut aller bien avant. Il faut vraiment les prendre dès, je dirais, au secondaire, qu'il y ait un travail qui se fait pour qu'ils puissent reconnaître et voir qu'ils peuvent avoir leur place et avoir un impact dans la vie des élèves.
Mm. Merci pour ce point. I'd like to just quickly add to that is that certainly in the work that I've been doing in schools, we see a representation of people of color and of black people from the black community, but the question is that their roles are not as educators, they're not as teachers, oftentimes they are as security guards, or they're actually there in a role of discipline and enforcement. Sometimes they work in the cafeteria. So maybe we need to also look at how there's continued systemic ways of excluding blacks from becoming teachers, encouraging them to become overseers. Dave has one last word. We will have to wrap up the questions and comments there. And we'll have some closing words from Reverend Gray.
Yeah, so sorry, I know we're very short for time, but I just wanted to say this in relation to both Miriam and Foe's comments, is that through the course of the project, as a result of doing interviews with youth, and particularly youth in the criminal justice system, I think it's important to acknowledge that the end result of the exclusionary policies and practices that Foe talked about and relating to Miriam's presentation, is that a disproportionate percentage of black youth are locked up in the penal system, in the criminal justice system, right? And I'm stating that to make the point that while we focus on what happens to youth in the schools, what happens with racial profiling, what happens in society at large in terms of systemic and institutional racism and exclusion, once these kids, in many cases are kids who 17, just turning 18, are locked up in that system, they become invisible and we forget about them and we're no longer talking about them. And I think that's there needs to be a kind of qualitative shift in that sense in terms of how we talk about younger people, right? These kids, in addition to being incarcerated, or young women and men, experience the same kind of racialization, and Miriam referred to this, once they're in prison, that they experience outside, and also, in often cases, it's exacerbated or amplified. And again, there are no advocates for them, even though, as Miriam did mention, that some of them have links with the wider community and their family. There really are no institutions advocating for prisoners once they're inside prison. So there's an entirely, completely other world out there that's separate from how we exist outside of prison day to day. And yet these are women and men who find their way back into society at some point, who have been completely forgotten about, in some cases, for 20, 25, 30 years. So I just wanted to kind of make that point as an adjunct to what was said earlier.